1037thebuzz.com.
Call that.
Welcome back to the Little Rock Touchdown Club. Justin Akre, Phil Elson. This is all presented by our friends at Epic Health. Let's head to the podium inside where Dan Hampton, who is the featured speaker today, former Razorback star defensive lineman who ended up playing his entire career for the Chicago Bears and is a NFL Hall of Famer in 2002. One of my favorite things is he made All-Pro as a interior defensive lineman, also as a defensive end, and certainly a very entertaining guy. We enjoyed having him on earlier.
But there's a lots of many subplots to that season. And one of them was the third game of the preseason. We had a Monday night football game against the Cowboys in Dallas. And I think John Madden and Pat Summerall, the great Pat Summerall, they were doing the game. And I remember, and Ray Tucker, you and I were laughing about this after the season. We went down for the preseason game, and we went down there, and I'm telling you, nobody was laughing and nobody was having a good time because the Bears had never beaten the Cowboys at Tiddlywinks ever in anything. And so we wanted to make a statement. Well, we not only knocked out a couple of quarterbacks, but they had to stop the game six times for fistfights because we hated them and they hated it. They had Randy White, Danny White, Tony Dorsett. They had a great team. They'd been to the Super Bowl two or three times, and we were kind of like the upstarts, you know. We want to kind of prove ourselves. So we go down there, and anyway, at the conclusion of the game, Don Pearson, the AP writer, said, man, I'd never seen a game like that. That was the most vicious preseason game I'd ever witnessed. And I said, yeah, well, we hate them, and they hate us, but I'll tell you this, they better have that cart that carries people off gassed up because we're coming back in November. Well, that week of the game, we're 10-0, and all week long, SportsCenter is running that quote on SportsCenter. Oh, big game, 8-2 Dallas against the Bears, 10-0, blah, blah, blah. So I'm quite sure Tom Landry and the rest of them were aware of what I said. Anyway, we're on the plane going down there, and Fincy comes up to me and goes, here, look at this. And he shows me a quote in the paper where Everson Walls, their all-pro cornerback, says, yeah, the Bears are good. They're 10-0, but they really hadn't played nobody. Let's see how they are once, you know, we get a chance at them. Well, as Jim said, you know, we went out. I think third play of the game, I batted a ball up. Richard Dent catches it and takes two steps into the end zone. The onslaught was on. Mike Singletary was screaming at the fans in the third quarter. Stay! We need witnesses! We want witnesses! Running up the ramp at the end of the game, 44-0. I get to my locker. I take my pads off. I turn around. There's a sea of cameras. One of the guys goes, well, what do you think? I said, Everson Walls is right. We're 11-0. We still ain't played nobody. So, so I don't like Dallas. Got to be proud of Jerry Jones. You know, I got to tell you, everybody wants to know, you know, how did this kid from a dirt road out in Cabot, Arkansas, wind up in the Hall of Fame? And real quick, as Jim said, I played in fifth and sixth grade. And all you folks who got parents and grandkids, listen to me for a second. There is a lot of problems in the game today about the head injuries. And I'll talk a little bit about that. Maybe we'll have a chance to do Q&A. But let me just tell you this. If you got a grandkid that wants to play football, you help him any way you can because it's a great game. It's a wonderful way of learning how to compete in life and becoming, you know, responsible. Nobody's holding your hand. You got to do it yourself. And I started playing in fifth and sixth grade. My brother Matt and I were big Razorback fans. My father loved the Razorbacks. I grew up wanting to be a Razorback, and I'll never forget the time in it was 1984, and we were in the process of setting the all-time NFL record for quarterback sacks in a season. It was 1984, and I think we set the record for 72. It'll never be broke. Last year's leaders had 43. I'm just saying, we were just pillaging everybody. And after we had about 8 or 10 sacks on Tommy Kramer from Rice, who was the Vikings quarterback, they sent in Archie Manning. And, you know, when somebody comes in the huddle, you're over there, it's fourth quarter, we're just, you know, we got our ears pinned back, we're coming after him. And about the third play, Archie, we run a double tackle twist where the tackles go up and the ends go upfield and then they loop underneath, and I was coming underneath, I was playing in. I come around the corner about 100 miles an hour, and Archie had seen the Red Sea part, and so he tucks the ball, here he comes. I come around, he doesn't see me coming. I hit him, and it sounded like a gun going off. Blows his face mask off his helmet. He's on the ground, and his nose looks like a taco. It's blood everywhere. And I say to myself, that's Archie Manning. He played for Ole Miss, and the Razorbacks beat Ole Miss. Do you remember this? Didn't they beat the Razorbacks? Or they beat us?
They beat us in the Sugar Bowl.
But that, I was a little kid. I don't remember that. I do remember my dad won the IBM pool where we got our first color TV. So that's why I remember Archie Manning. Remember that, man? We got our first color TV. Anyway, so now I'm looking at it, and I'm thinking, oh, no, I killed Archie. I got to watch Gilligan in color because we got our first TV. Anyway, I'm sitting there watching him, and he's out cold as a wedge, and I get him off. Years later, 10 years later, I'm in Memphis. I'm playing in the St. Jude's Classic. And on the 15th and 9th hole, you've got fairways going opposite directions. And there's this young kid. Oh, hell, it's been 12, 15 years ago. This big geeky guy's over there, and I'm getting out of the golf cart. And I look over there, and I'm saying, hey, that looks like Peyton Manning. Because the Razorbacks, you know, I played Tennessee, and I knew what he looked like. And, you know, he's tall guys, 6'6 or so. And he's getting out of the cart, and he looks at me, and I look at him, and he kind of waves, and he's getting his clubs, and then he wheels around, and he goes, hey, you're that dude that broke my daddy's nose. But I love the Razorbacks. So after sixth grade, the junior high coaches, and, you know, the way it was told to me was, I was 180 pounds, and I could run like a 10 flat. And, I mean, I could go. I grew up on a farm carrying bales of hay and all that. I was a little Abner. And I was excited about playing. Well, after that fall, I was in a wheelchair for 4 months or so. And the doctor said, look, we had to put a plate and four screws in your right heel and take 80% of the bone out. You're not going to be able to walk comfortably, let alone play a contact sport. So, as you said, I did the normal thing here in Arkansas. I learned how to play the saxophone. And don't worry, Ray. I'm not going to say anything. I'm not going to say anything about Jennifer Flowers. Don't worry. I'm not going to say nothing. Anyway, focus here. Anyway. So I didn't, you know, I'll never forget. I got to learn how to play guitar. My mom and dad knew how to play guitar. And so sitting in a wheelchair, I was watching Hee Haw one night, and at the conclusion of it, I said, if Buck Owens is smart enough to play guitar, you can teach me. So I learned how to play the guitar. Now I'm in the junior high band, and I'm playing the bass, okay, because the guy said we need a bass player, blah, blah, blah. Now I'm in senior high, and it's the 10th grade, and I'm up there in the band, and the team's getting the hell beat out of them. And anyway, at halftime, I get my saxophone, and I'm getting ready to take the Red Devil playing field. And Coach Reed walks by glaring at me like, what in the hell are you doing? You're 6'6", 240 pounds, holding a 12-pound saxophone. Well, that spring, he and a guy named Ron Mayton, they incessantly bothered me. And you need to play. You need to come out. And they said, we know about your leg. We know about all that stuff. But, you know, the good Lord heals you, and you got a chance. So, anyway, I went out for football that summer, and he made a rule where I had to put in 100 hours of work to basically equate what they did in the off season. And I did it, and I don't know if I did 100, but it was pretty close, wasn't it, Coach? It was pretty close. Pretty close. Close enough. Well, that first year we went 2-9, and I wasn't very good. But the next year I had high hopes, and I had a motorcycle wreck the day before practice started, but I still was able to generate a lot of interest. And I didn't know this till later, but I told Coach Reed, I said, look, you know, I know a lot of colleges may be sniffing around seeing if I could play, but if the Razorbacks, you know, show interest, that's, I have no interest. My father had died when I was in eighth grade. So by then, you know, things were tight and tough, and the opportunity to go and play college football was an amazing opportunity for me. And sure enough, Coach Turner, I'll never forget, he recruited me and said, hey, we want you to come up, and, you know, we'd like for you to look around, and maybe we can, you know, talk about extending you a scholarship. I said, great. Well, that weekend, my brother drove me up there, and I'll never forget, that we were supposed to have a recruiting party at Jimmy Johnson's house. So I went and I knocked on the door at Jimmy Johnson's house. The door opened, and there was Jimmy Johnson. His hair was perfect. And I said, I'm Dan Anthony. He goes, I know who you are. Come in. And so we talked, and he said, look, we're going to offer you a scholarship, but, you know, we don't know where we're going to play yet. And I said, oh, really? I said, what about my grades? Because I wasn't a very good student. He goes, well, I talked to the principal, and I think we got things worked out. I said, oh, really? He said, you're going to graduate 612 out of a class of 654. And I said, that's pretty good, isn't it? He said, no, overall, the principal said it was a stupid class, so that ain't that big a deal, actually. But I went up there, and I tell you what, my freshman year, I went up there, and I was homesick as could be. You know, when, you know, my dad died, my brother, sister, my mom, and I got real close. And, you know, you go up there, and it's 2-a-days, 3-a-days back then. Thank you very little. 3-a-days. You're talking about how hot it is on the field. Back then, it was AstroTurf. And we would have 3 practices a day, and it would be 140 degrees. They should have been arrested for what they did to us back then, right? The way they worked us. But I tell you what, I was living the dream. And I think the Baylor game, the fourth game of the year, I actually started. We went to a 4-3 front, and I got to play some. And, you know, we went on, and we beat Georgia in the Cotton Bowl. And even though I really had strong thoughts about, hey, I'll transfer to UCA, I was a homestead, I went home for 2 weeks, and I got so bored I couldn't wait for school to start again. So I never looked back. And how lucky was I to have the teammates that I did, you know, the guys from Arkansas that I was recruited with from here in Little Rock and all over. Larry Jackson, who recently passed away a few years ago, he was a great player. ABC Defensive Player of the Year in 1978. Jimmy Walker. You know, Jimmy Walker, the first time I ever saw Harold Horton, who, you know, Steve, you threw a retirement party for a couple of years ago. I talked to a coach this morning. You know, Jimmy Walker had kind of ate everything in Little Rock that summer, and he had went from 220 to 280. And so when he got to the All-Star game, they put him at nose tackle, and nobody could block him. So the Razorbacks gave him a scholarship. Dale White was a linebacker for the East, and I was playing for the West. They moved me to guard so I'd block him. I mean, it was such a great synergy of young players, and we're coming up there, and we're trying to, you know, be a part of something and turn it around. And I got to tell you, we have a gentleman here in the audience today that – you know, every football team has captains. Normally the captains are the ones that you look to when things go wrong. Yeah, hey, when you're up 40 to nothing, nobody's looking around. They're looking at their wife or girlfriend, you know. They, when you're down, you know, when you fumble on the 5, this is the guy you look at. He was a great player for the Arkansas Razorbacks. He was the guy that I, my favorite player that I've ever played with, Bo Busby. He's sitting right over here. Bo, stand up, will you please? I got to bend down here. So let me tell you, and I mean that with all sincerity. You know, like I said, when I got to Chicago, the two guys that I really loved playing with and for was plank and fencing. I don't know what it is about the safety position, but it's such a command of not only the field, but, you know, they're if you can get great safety play, boy, you got a lot of good fortune ahead of you. But, you know, Bo was a great player. And even though things didn't work out for us that following year, how lucky was I that when Frank wanted to make a change, he brought in Lou Holtz. And I got to tell you, a lot of folks here in Arkansas still remember him very fondly. I still thank the world of Lou. He's hard to put up with sometimes. But I got to tell you, a motivation machine. He was the guy. And I'll never forget the first time we got together, he challenged all of us. He said, hey, you guys got a lot of talent. You had great players at every position, but you went 5-5-1. You know, I want to know what your goals are. And he started preaching about everybody needs to set goals and work towards those, because a goal is nothing more than a dream. You show me somebody without a goal, I'll show you somebody that doesn't care what happens today. You know, I don't really care what happens today or next week. I'll never forget, he sent out a bunch of paper and pencils and said, I want you guys to write down your goals as a student athlete here at the University of Arkansas in that very first meeting. I didn't know what to write down. I'm looking over here, and this guy's writing, I want to get a degree. This one's writing down, I want to be all conference. My roommate, not real smart, he's writing down, I want to date a cheerleader. I wrote down, I want to win a national championship, because I never won anything in my life. And I thought that's the dream that we all should have. And we passed the papers up, and sure enough, he was going through the papers. He goes, which one of you wrote down, I want to win a national championship? And I fully expected 80, 85% of the team to raise their hand. Nobody raised their hand, and I kind of sheepishly raised my hand. He said, you misspelled championship, by the way. But he says that's exactly the attitude that we're going to have. We're going to turn this thing around. And ladies and gentlemen, you were firsthand witnesses to see it. One play kept us from winning the national championship the next day, the next year. We had Texas down. I can't remember, what was it, 9-6 or something like that? And late in the fourth quarter, I think a minute and 30 seconds or so, Texas, you know, the only loss of the season, Texas throws it to a running back that had never caught a ball before then or after in his career. Of course, his name was Earl Campbell, and he went 73 yards. But that team came within one play of winning the national championship. But that year in the Orange Bowl, and my friend Doc Zimmerman over here just exemplifies why I love the Razorback fans. When I first met him 20 years ago, he couldn't wait to tell me the story about the Orange Bowl. He goes, "Oh yeah, I love the Orange Bowl. That was great." And you know, at the time I was playing for the Bears, and I hate to say it, but you know, I kind of moved on and I was thinking about different things. He goes, "Oh no, that was the greatest thing we'd ever seen." He goes, "I lived up in St. Vincent, a little town up above Moulton." He goes, "I worked at the mill, and I'd saved up $50, and I bet $50 on the Razorbacks that night." And he said that was all the money I had in the world. And he said, that night at the game, we went over to my friend's house, and there was 24 of us sitting in a trailer watching a 19-inch TV with only one couch in the house. There was 8 people on the floor, 8 people on the front cushion, 8 people on the back of the couch, and 8 people standing up. And he said everybody watched every second of that game. Now, that is what being a Hog fan is all about right there, Doc. And that's why it was so great to be a part of that year and that team. You know, my senior year, I got to tell you, I was highly disappointed. We lost to Texas again. Another bad call on me for roughing the passer that I think Lou still remembers quite vividly, in fact. Every time I see him, he brings it up. But I'll never forget how wonderful it was to be a part of that group. Brad Shepp from Carlisle, William Hampton from Forest City, Dale White from Benton, all these Arkansas kids. And yeah, we had some great players from outside the state, you know, like Florida, David, and, you know, you guys later on. But, you know, Arkansas had to play against every team in Texas and Texas officials. You remember how tough the sledding was back then? It was BS, I'm telling you. That's why we're in the SEC today.
Well, we would love to continue with Dan Hampton from the podium here at the Little Rock Touchdown Club. We've got to take our final timeout. It's 12:52. Justin Angry, Phil Elson. Appreciate you tuning in today, and always a thrill, man, Dan Hampton. I would say he gets the game ball so far for this.